It's Friday, the 20th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Damien Inglis and Enes Kanter. The show brought to you by Loot Crate and Brooklyn Nick. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Brooklyn Nick and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become the sponsor of the show. So thank you to Brooklyn Nick for his support and to everyone else who left a review for the show. It takes you a couple of minutes and it really does help the show keep going on to bigger and better things, hopefully. Along with this show, every show that I broadcast, every show that I do, is broadcast live on YouTube. And if you are watching live on YouTube and you have any comments or any interjections that you wish to throw at me, you can tweet at me at redrock_bball and we can discuss any of your comments live on air. So if you are watching and have anything to talk about with this podcast, which is the Los Angeles Lakers season in review show, tweet at me at redrock_bball and I'll address it as best that I can. What we're going to do, as per all of these season review shows, and if you haven't caught the first two, we've done the Philadelphia 76ers, and myself and Matt Smith did the Phoenix Suns podcast, so they're available in the archives of the podcast and the show on YouTube and iTunes and Stitcher and all those sort of places. Check them out too. But we go through and look at the team overall, look at all the players on the team, talk about dynasty value, what we expect from them from redraft next season, just general things that are happening with the team. Preview any overseas stash players that might be coming over, and then we answer your questions, which is in the latter half of the show. So we'll be doing that today when we're talking Los Angeles Lakers. Now, the Lakers, we know, were poor. They finished with the second worst record last season at 17-65, the worst record in Lakers history. My mate Byron Scott steered them to that horrible record, and he is done. And with the news today, or yesterday maybe, yeah, yesterday it was, with Jeff Hornacek agreeing to a deal with the New York Knicks. No coaches left that I mercilessly hung shit on last season. Scott's gone, Rambis is gone, Sam Mitchell's gone. All the coaches, Scott Skiles is gone. All the coaches that I had plentiful issues with are all gone. And it's great from an NBA point of view when there's clearly situations that just don't make any sense to move on and get something happening. Luke Walton arriving in Los Angeles now. We don't know how he'll necessarily go as a head coach. Yes, he started the season with the Warriors as the coach, but he wasn't really the head coach. He was the head coach on game days. He was making some rotational decisions, but Steve Kerr was there pulling the strings, puppeteering while he was recovering from his back problem. The game plan, the culture, all that stuff was set up prior to Walton taking charge for those first however many games that he coached for. Not saying he's going to be a bad coach or anything like that, but we don't have a fully firm grasp on what Walton is as a coach, bringing in his own system, his assistants, his game plan, his interactions with new players. It almost can't be anything but a step up from Byron Scott, given the fact that Byron Scott was dreadful and useless, and I've had enough rants on Byron Scott, and if we don't see him in the NBA again, that'll be a great time, because I just don't want to talk about that guy ever again. But Walton is going to have his own unique set of challenges. Let's hope that the front office doesn't, well, if you're a Lakers fan, let's hope the front office doesn't create issues. And we've already heard some weird sort of rumblings coming out of LA about talking about trading the pick, the number two pick that they did get in the draft at the lottery on Tuesday night, trying to speed up the rebuild process. There's going to be... They just need to not stuff it up. And they can't stuff up the pick. I think that's pretty clear at this point. It's going to be Simmons or Ingram. It's looking like it's going to be Ingram at this point, very early on, obviously. They can't stuff that up. But they've got to watch what they're doing in terms of their trades, overpaying guys in free agency. They've got to take a real cautious approach to this, because they've been bad for 2 years. They've got some young assets here, and they've got to build to something and not trying to go, we're the Lakers, let's get free agents, we're going to dominate everyone next season. If they make the playoffs, I'll be stunned next season. Stunned. It depends on obviously what happens in the offseason, but they do need to take a bit of a cautious approach. I talked draft before, and they do have the number two pick. They also have the number 32 pick in the draft, so obviously the number two is an awesome pick. Number 32 can be pretty handy as well. So they've got a couple of young players most likely headed their way. Again, that trade possibility is still there, which we'll cover off a little bit later as well. But I'll be stunned if they didn't take Ingram. Well, I'd be stunned if there was common sense involved and they didn't take Ingram, because I think that that's what they need to do. They need to grab him, and he fits a huge hole on this team if they happen to take him, which everything is leaning towards that happening at this point. Let's talk about impending free agents that this team has got. Obviously, Kobe Bryant has retired, taking a $25 million chunk off their payroll. Roy Hibbert is an unrestricted free agent. You would have to think that if he comes back, it's on a much cheaper deal, but he was absolutely putrid. And where he ends up is going to be a really low-key, interesting storyline of the offseason, because what role does he have in the NBA? He's been really poor the last two seasons, exceptionally poor last year. He will find a spot somewhere, but where and how many minutes is he going to play? He's, his job as a starter, to me, appears pretty much dead. There is no chance of him becoming a starter anywhere. Interesting to see where Hibbert leans next year. They've got Ryan Kelly, who's an unrestricted free agent. Bob Sacre is an unrestricted free agent. Meta World Peace is an unrestricted free agent. Those three guys, don't think they really did anything this season to make me think that they'll be returning next year. Tariq Black's a restricted free agent. I think he'll be back. I think he shows a lot of promise. Marcelo Huertas is a restricted free agent. But the big one is Jordy Clarkson, who is a restricted free agent as well. He is going to get a big deal somewhere. Because he's only played 2 years in the league, he's going to be subject to the Gilbert Arenas rule, meaning he can't get big money in the first year. It has to be like that deal that Jeremy Lin and Omar Asik signed, where they get the two smaller deals years up front and then the big one in that third year. Someone's going to sign him to a big deal. He will be back in LA, I am almost 100% sure, and we're going to talk about him in a little bit more time. We've got Anthony Brown as a second-round draft choice, who is he doesn't have any free agency issues. Brandon Bass is the guy I wanted to talk about. He has a player option for $3 million for next season. You would think that he would opt out of that player option and explore the plethora of cash that is floating around in the NBA next season, because he was pretty solid, but what does he offer a team? He's a 31-year-old backup big man, and maybe he's back at the Lakers, but he will be opting out of that, I am almost certain, and trying to get himself a 2 or 3 year deal at maybe 5, maybe 6 million a year. It's a possibility, but that's the way that he'll definitely be looking at that moving forward, you would think. Let's get into these players and talk about them in a bit more detail. But first of all, a word from our sponsor, which today is Loot Crate. And Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items each month, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. We've got our own unique URL over on Loot Crate. It's lootcrate.com/redrock. And if you head across and use that unique URL, it tells the people at Loot Crate you came from listening to this podcast. And it also enables you to use our $3 coupon code, which is redrock as well. But you can only use that coupon code if you access Loot Crate by going to lootcrate.com/redrock. This month's theme for Loot Crate was power, but it's actually expired now. You are done. You cannot access the one-of-a-kind items, the Warcraft stuff, the Dragon Ball Z stuff, the Marvel stuff. You can't access any of those things because it's done. On the 19th of each month, all that stuff is toast. It's finished. You can't access it again. But still, head across to lootcrate.com/redrock. Check out the stuff they've got. Subscribe if it's something you're interested in, but just check it out, because Loot Crate's done a great job and been a fantastic sponsor of the show. And if you just check it out, it helps the show grow tremendously. All right, let's get into these players. And the Lakers were a team that was absolutely bereft of fantasy value. They weren't the worst team in the NBA, but from a fantasy point of view, they pretty much were. They didn't have one player who was a top 100 player for the season. It doesn't matter if you're talking 9-cat full season, 8-cat full season. If you're looking at maybe some punting values, you get a couple of guys in the 8-2 ranks that just snuck inside the top 100. But otherwise, not one player who was a top 100 player for the year. And that's a pretty poor return. I think that changes tremendously heading into this season. We're going to start off with the first guy, which is Jordan Clarkson, who is almost assuredly back next season. His season was interesting because he was Byron Scotted a lot to start the season, which was horrific with the way that Scott treated these guys, but I'm trying to make a promise myself not to talk about Scott anymore. Clarkson was non-existent in his rookie season for the first couple of months. came on really strong second half and put up almost top 50 numbers, and a lot of people were predicting him to be a top 50, top 60 player this season. That was not something that I envisaged happening. It didn't happen, but he did improve his overall numbers. He finished 112th this season, up from 135th last year in 9-cat, 101 versus 132 in 8-category leagues, but didn't really have that big breakout sort of thing. He was 109/115 pre and post All-Star. So look, not bad, but nothing too spectacular. He did average 32 minutes a game, the most on the team. 15.5 points, led the team in scoring. He hit 1.5 threes and improved his three-point shooting a lot. 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and that really dropped down because he's not playing as the point guard. And that's going to be something. We saw his point guard numbers and his assist numbers in that second half of his rookie season be quite impressive. It's not going to happen like that. He could be a guy who averages 3 assists a game, but he's not going to be a 5 or 6 guy. He was at a steal a game, and he was really efficient, 43%, which actually did dip a little bit because he was at 45, 46 for a big stretch of the year, and 80% from the free throw line. The minutes, 32, does he play more? Yeah, maybe. I think he probably plays 33 or 34 minutes next season. But the big thing is Kobe Bryant's not there. And Kobe Bryant's not there jacking 17 shots a game. Now, Clarkson's not going to take those 17 shots because the rookie coming in at number 2 will take some of them. But you would think that Clarkson will go up from his 14 shots a game and he'll take 16, he'll take 17 shots a game. And he might take his scoring from 15 to 18 points. He might approach 1.7 threes a game. He might get you 5 rebounds. He might get you 3 assists. And I think that, and this was something that I did preach last season in a dynasty league, if you're looking at Clarkson, you have to get him at the right value, because it's not going to pay off in 2015-16, but in 16-17, when Kobe's gone, that is when it's going to pay off for Clarkson. And I think that we're going to see him jump back to being a top 70 sort of player, maybe not a top 50, but a top 70, top 75 sort of guy next season. And all because that Bryant's not there, basically just mucking everything up offensively and not providing any flow, taking shots, not hitting the shots, and being just generally horrific as a player for most of the season. So I really have big hopes for Clarkson moving forward. I think that he can start to put up some really good numbers. And he was, you know, probably their best player last season. I think that's one of their best players. His advanced numbers aren't awesome. He's 7th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus was a negative. He was at negative 1.4, which was 5th on the team. He had a below average PER. His true shooting was at 52%. His assist rate obviously dropped a lot. His turnovers were okay. But he was still really important for this team. And for the other guys who were around that area, and we talk about Roy Hibbert having a bad season, but his advanced numbers were quite good, which we'll get to soon. But these guys like Bass and Hibbert were guys who were sort of ahead of Clarkson in these advanced numbers, and they're not going to be there. So he's going to take on a bigger responsibility. He's heading into a pivotal third year. He'll be playing with a bigger contract. I think this is prime for Jordan Clarkson to have a really, really big season, and I'm super keen on him at this early stage. Obviously, lots of water to go under the bridge, but in a dynasty league, if you can acquire him, try it. Top 75 is sort of the area that I think you should be targeting. If you're getting for anything sort of outside of top 100 range, I do really think that Clarkson can have a bounce back. Lou Williams was a player. Yep, he was a player who came across from Toronto after winning the Sixth Man of the Year award. Obviously, he joined the Lakers and played that Sixth Man of the Year or Sixth Man role for a stretch of time until Byron Scott was as well. Let's let Kevin Durant describe what Byron Scott was.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot. All right, that's what we got to say about that. He's an idiot.
Kevin, you've hit the nail right on the head. He's an idiot. He put Lou Williams into the starting lineup, and yes, Williams was key for this team in terms of maybe getting them a couple of wins, and his advanced numbers were quite good, but Lou Williams is a sixth man. You've got a rookie and a second-year player as your point guard and shooting guard, and they got benched. Well, Clarkson didn't get benched, but he had his minutes sort of reduced in order to get Williams into that starting lineup. And Williams put up nice numbers. He was 106th in 9-category leagues, 106th in 8-category leagues. He does what he does, you know, well, and that was scoring. He has 15.3 points in 28.5 minutes, 1.6 triples. He was, you know, doesn't rebound the ball well, 2.5 assists, 0.9 steals, 41 and 83 is his percentages. He was okay. But Lou Williams is 29. He's not going to be playing significant minutes for the next great Lakers team. And what he did last year was take minutes and take development time away from Clarkson, away from Russell. Interesting to see how Walton handles him, but he'll go back into that six-man role and play 24, 25 minutes, and that will be absolutely fantastic for this team to have a guy who can come on and run the second unit and score in the second unit when their bench doesn't look to have that great depth at this point. That'll be the perfect role for Williams, but I don't see him being a top 100 player again. He might be a guy that you sneak a pick in a 12-team league in the last round and get 16 points, which is not easy to come by at that point in a draft. You get 1.5 to 2 threes, you get really good free throw percentage. These things are not easy to come by because I still think he'll have a pretty significant role. But I don't think he'll be playing the same role that he did under Scott. I don't think that he'll be playing the same minutes. I think that will drop down a little bit as well. So I think that Lou Williams is definitely on the downside of things at this point. If you look at his advanced numbers, they were pretty good. He actually led the team in win shares. He only played 67 games as well, so quite good there. Offensive box score plus minus, he was clearly the best guy there, 3.0, whereas the next highest was 0.8. Defensively, he's atrocious. He was the fourth worst on the team defensively, and it gave him a box score plus minus overall of 0.3, which is second on the team, but still the best player in terms of VORP, really high, the best PER on the team. He played well, so I guess I can't be too harsh on Scott for playing him, but you weren't there to win games. You weren't there to see, let's see if Lou Williams can give us four games, which is what his win shares were. Did the four games that Lou Williams give you do anything? Not really, and that was my major concern. But he should be sort of, he's still going to be a really effective player. He's still going to have a role, and a pretty significant role, but it won't be the same role that he had this season. I could be wrong. That's just the way that I'm seeing it at this point. D'Angelo Russell. If you're buying D'Angelo Russell, this is the time. His value is extraordinarily low, and in large part because of the Nick Young Snapchat fiasco that happened. Everyone wants to see him gone. Everyone wants to see he'll never play for the Lakers. They don't trust him. This will blow over. There is no concern to me with this with D'Angelo Russell. He didn't have a great season. 176 in 9-cat leagues. 117 in 8-cat, a lot better. Started off the season horrifically and was really poorly treated by Scott. He was 118th in the 8-2 rankings, and not bad. He had a nice little stretch at around the February mark where he put up tremendous numbers. We thought, here we go. Russell has been unleashed. But then he regressed again, and the Nick Young issue really put him back into his shell, and the numbers weren't great to round out the season. Now, he played 28 minutes a night. He was at 13, 3.5, and 3.5, 1.2 steals, 1.6 triples, 41 and 74 on 36% from three. They're pretty good numbers. His player comps are really impressive to me as to what people do when you look at the stats, and when I've got my whole player comps done, which I haven't talked about much on these podcasts. We're comparing the players across, I think, 16 or 17 different statistical categories all the way back to 1983 to see who had the best or the most comparable season across all of those categories and averaged out, including age as one of those categories as well. And the player comps for D'Angelo Russell were super encouraging to me. And to me, I think that he's going to have a massive season. It is only his second season, so there will be some growing pains, but I think that he has a monster season. For a start, I think he plays an extra 5 to 6 minutes a game. He's going to be under Luke Walton, who'll treat him as a homeless man, Steph Curry. He's not Steph Curry. I know that. He'll never be Steph Curry. I know that. But Walton, for all intents and purposes, he is Luke Walton, Steph Curry, if Walton's going to bring over what he'd been doing in Golden State, which you would have to imagine he tries to do to some degree. Russell will play more minutes. He will hit his threes, and 36% from three as a rookie is pretty impressive. 1.6 triples. His court vision is great. Now, I still have concerns with Russell. I still think he's a bit slow. I don't think his athleticism is great, and I wasn't the biggest fan of him coming out, especially for last season, given the whole situation, Clarkson, Williams, Kobe, all that sort of stuff. But I think that he is going to be fantastically good next season, or at least in comparison to what we saw from his rookie season. And if the owner of D'Angelo Russell in your dynasty league is buying into the Nick Young situation and, oh, this guy's trash, what a shithead, what kind of a bloke is this, and doesn't rate him, get him and get him at a discount, because I don't want to go too bold, but I reckon we could be seeing a top 60 player from Russell next season. And that might feel bold, but I think that he can really, really turn the screws and put up a tremendous, tremendous season. Now, his advanced numbers, they're not great. Like, he wasn't good. He was 12th on the team in win shares at just zero. So he contributed no wins to the team. Negative offensively, slight positive defensively. His win shares per 48 were poor. His defense, his box score plus minus was a little bit better. He finished at negative 1.8, just below Jordan Clarkson. His PER, less than average, 13.2. His VORP, 0.1. So all in all, he was basically just a nothing, advanced statistics-wise. But he led the team, or second on the team in assist percentage behind Marcelo Huertas. He led the team in steals percentage. His turnovers weren't the worst on the team, which is something you can say for a rookie. He led the team in usage. If you take out Kobe Bryant's ridiculous 32% usage, which is just out of control. He's a good rebounder as a point guard as well, Russell. This is a real opportunity for him to put up just a massive, massive season. So I am really looking forward to seeing what he can do. And to me, he is going to be one of the breakout players of next season. I don't need to talk about Kobe too much because we're not seeing him again, because he was horrific. Now, he was probably one of the biggest proponents or advertisers for why your punting situations allow certain players to be owned. You couldn't own him if you weren't punting. You couldn't own him in rotisserie leagues because of what he did to your field goal percentage, which was absolutely horrible. It was talking Z scores, it was a negative 3.3, which you don't see apart from guys like Drummond and Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan and their free throw percentage. He was at 35.8% from the field on 16.8 attempts. He shot 28.5 from three, which is horrible in itself. On seven attempts a game he took from three, he was just jacking shots like he did not give a shit, and because that's accurate, he did not care. And it killed you. But if you punted field goal percentage, you see his rank rise from 137. He was in 8 cat leagues. 82, if you take away his two worst categories. So he was a must own in a punt field goal situation. But he's done. Let's not talk about him. Let's go to Julius Randle, who is another one of these young brigade that this team has got. Now, Randle played 81 games, which is great considering he played half of one in his rookie season. So this was, in effect, his rookie year. He played 28 minutes a game. He had 11.3 points and 10 rebounds, one of the top rebounders in the game. Didn't really hit any threes, but that could come. 1.8 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks, 43 and 72. 28% of his threes he hit. These are not great numbers. Randle, 9 cat, 165th. 8 cat, 138th. But we saw a jump of about 2 or 3 rounds on his pre and post All-Star numbers. In terms of his punting value, he didn't really take that much of an advantage from looking at the 8-2. In fact, he sort of stepped back as other guys overtook him. What do you think about Randle? I personally don't like him. I don't think that he's going to be a great player in this league, and I don't think that he's going to be a great fantasy contributor, because you get a guy who's can't shoot, who just looks a bit lost to me offensively. He's not a great defender. He's a great rebounder, really good rebounder, fantastic already, but that's it. Yeah, 10 rebounds is great, really, really good production, but he was a positive in no other category, none. Yeah, below average scoring, no defense, no steals, no blocks, no assists, no threes, bad field goal percentage, bad free throw percentage, did nothing. And you look at a guy like Russell and you're like, oh, I can see where he improves. I can't see how Randle, he'll improve, yes. I don't ever see him becoming a top 50 player in fantasy. Don't see it. To me, he's a guy that, yeah, he might be a starting power forward on a 8 seed. I don't think he's ever a starting power forward on a great team or a championship team. And if the Lakers do end up with Ben Simmons, Randle's going to go to the bench and Simmons is going to play over him. And that's fine because Randle really isn't that good. I don't rate him very, very highly at all, as you can probably tell from these conversations that we're having here. Now, his win shares were okay. He finished 6th in win shares on the team at 1.6. His box score plus minus was left a little bit to be desired. Negative 3.6. His offensive box score plus minus was negative 3.7, which was absolutely horrible. And he is not a good offensive player. He was not a good, he was below average replacement player. He had a PER of below average as well. Nothing really stands out apart from his rebounding, which was fantastic. He had a total rebounding percentage of just under 20%, which led the team clearly. But he offers nothing. No steals, no blocks, no assists, no threes, no field goal percentage, no free throw percentage. And that will all improve. The field goal percentage will probably jump 2 or 3% this year. The free throws will probably go up 2% as well. But to me, he's not someone who I ever see as a top 50 player. So when you're looking in dynasty leagues, remember that. And if you've got him, someone will value him. People do like him. And he's got that overratedness about him. And I'm not saying that he's overrated, but people seem to think that he's better than what he is because they see, you know what? He averaged 10 rebounds. Yeah, great. But what about the other seven categories? What did he do there? Nothing. He hurt you in all those categories. And 10 rebounds is really good. But I don't see it for Randall moving forward. I don't see him ever becoming a great player. And some people might view it. And if they view him as great, then it's unloading time. And you try and get rid of him. And you try and get some value back if you can. And it is a possibility. But I'm not a massive Julius Randle fan. Brandon Bass had a pretty solid season. He was 141st in 9 cats, 180th in 8 cats because his turnover rate is just ridiculously low. And that's a 40 position jump. And that's why when I talk 9 cats, you know I don't like 9 categories or really focusing on turnovers because it's, you know, you don't play someone, you win turnovers. That's how you get it. But he was 0.6 turnovers a game. So in a 9 cat roto, which is probably one of the worst formats to me outside of points leagues, you play that, he had value there. But he played 20 minutes a game. He went 7-4. He 0.8 blocks, which is almost a career high for him. 55% from the field, 85% from the line. And that's where his value is. He is super efficient in terms of his shooting from the field and one of the better free throw shooting big men in the league. But as I touched on, he's old. He's 31. He has got a player option, which I think he declines. He might come back. It'll be at a higher rate. But what's he going to do? He's going to be stuck behind Randall for the foreseeable future. Ingram can play some four as well. So I don't see what Bass has got going for him heading forward in his career. His arrow is definitely pointing downwards. But for the Lakers, he was tremendous. And he did what he needed to do. Now, the fact that he was getting minutes over Randall at stages was silly. But his advanced numbers were pretty good. Win shares of 4.1, second on the team. Led the team in win shares per 48. Great. One of only two players to have a positive box score plus minus. One of only two players to have a VORP of 1. And one of only two players to have an above average PER. And the other one was Lou Williams. So the veteran presence of those guys, they did actually play well. But my major concern with them was taking away minutes and some development from some of the other guys like Randall, like Clarkson, like Russell. But for what they did, fantastic. But you'd have to think that it does start to drop off a bit for Brandon Bass now. He won't be able to put up the same sort of numbers. The efficiency will still be there, but I just don't think that he's playing 20 minutes on really any... On what team is he playing 20 minutes? Maybe it is back on the Lakers that he plays 20 minutes. Maybe that's where he fits. But the fact that he put up a career-best block rate at age 30, to me, feels a little bit untenable. I don't think that he does that again. But he's been a pretty consistent player through most of his career. I'm not feeling Brandon Bass, and I don't think I'd be alone in saying that. Roy Hibbert, he was terrible. And from a fantasy point of view, especially, and the second half of the season was atrocious. 8 cat league 197, 9 cat 178, punt situation 172. But we look at his pre and post All Star split. You got 153 pre, 248 post. Like these are, it's a big difference, and it's a big split. And what happens to him moving forward? Yeah, look, he can still have a few games where he was able to block shots and put up some decent numbers. We saw Hibbert; he averaged 5 rebounds a game, 6 points a game, but still 1.5 blocks. But as a big man playing 23 minutes, you need to get more than 5 rebounds. You need to shoot better than 44%. He's a great free throw shooter, 81%, but he doesn't offer enough to me. And yeah, he's an unrestricted free agent. Where he goes, though, to me, I can't see any situation in which Hibbert improves on what he's currently doing. What does he do? I think he plays minutes in the teens moving forward, 15 minutes, and he doesn't get a $15 million contract. No chance whatsoever. What does he get? 5? who knows? I wouldn't. He can still protect the rim, definitely, and he still has some pretty decent defensive numbers. He was second on the team in defensive win share. He led the team in defensive box score plus minus by a fair distance, but he's just such a negative on offense, and he's just he was a negative 3.1 on offense, one of the worst on the team. He just doesn't. He doesn't do anything. To me, there's no chance you draft him in standard leagues next season. He's 29 already. I don't see Roy Hibbert lasting past this next contract in the NBA. To me, his arrow is as far down, pointing as far down as almost as possible. Larry Nance. Bit of a surprise, I think it's fair to say, with Nance last season. He was picked at pick 27 in the first round of the draft, and a lot of people went, Lakers picking Nance at 27, like, well, that doesn't sound right, that's not right. But it was right, and he turned out to be one of the steals of the draft, and he started over Julius Randle, and you can't really get on Scott for doing that, because it's still he's still playing a rookie. Now, Nance had a lot of problems with his knees, which is a concern for him moving forward, and that's my biggest concern with him. But fantasy-wise, I thought he did all right. Now, could he be someone who fits, I talked about Russell being a homeless man's Steph Curry. Is Larry Nance someone who plays as a dead person's Draymond Green? I don't know. But he does have a lot of defensive ability. Julius Randle's maybe got the passing of Green, but Nance has some of the defensive ability that we, or the rim protection ability that we've seen from Green moving forward. Nance, I think we'd be surprised to know that he finished third on the team in win shares at 2.2, ahead of Clarkson, ahead of Randle, ahead of Russell, clearly ahead of Kobe, who was last on this team in win shares. That's how poor Kobe was last year. Nance was pretty impressive. In win shares per 48, he was third on the team. In box score plus minus, he was fourth. So a lot of things really pointed in the right direction for Larry Nance. He was a big, big surprise packet. He averaged 20 minutes a game, 5.5 points, 5 rebounds, 0.9 steals, half a block, 53-68 as his percentages. He did take some threes. He hit just 10% of them, so that's not an ideal situation there. But he can sort of pop out a little bit and take some of these shots. And I think that Nance is going to work himself into a pretty decent role. Now, he's already 23. That's a little bit of a concern in terms of a rookie. The persistent knee problems are also a concern that plagued him for most of the season. He had some problems in college with his knee as well, I believe. So there is a concern there moving forward, but he's on a super cheap deal, obviously a 27th pick deal, when he's getting paid $1 million, which in a $90 million salary cap is crazy good. He is going to be the backup four behind Randle. He could be the starter, but at center, but he could play minutes at center. I think that in some small ball situations, which we know Luke Walton's going to have some sort of liking of, given his history with the Warriors, he could play. He could play some center, and he played 31% of his minutes last season at center. He had a great on-off metric of 8.2, which means that the team was 8.2 points per 100 possessions better off with him on the court versus when he sat. And I think that what we've seen from him has been pretty encouraging, and definitely not something that I was really anticipating from him. He could be a guy who averages a block a game. He could be a guy who gets you, or he, you know, 1.5 steals a game, that sort of player. And being a 12.7 rebound sort of guy, he's more of a deeper league guy to me. Maybe he becomes a top 100 guy. I'm not putting a huge amount of faith in that happening. But I do really like what Nance was able to provide this season. Definitely a huge surprise. And I think that his second season will obviously be improved. And not really seeing what the Lakers... I don't think they're phasing him out of anything or anything like that. I think they'll be looking to build around him as sort of a second-tier part of their core. And again, they don't have a center. Hibbert's going to be gone. Sacre's going to be gone. Tariq Black, maybe they give it to him. But maybe they play Nance at center some and see how that works out. Because he does have the ability, and he did play there some last season and wasn't horrible in that role. So I could see Larry Nance putting up some decent numbers and being a surprise packet who becomes must-own at certain stretches during the season. If you're talking dynasty, I don't have massive high hopes for him, but he's not a bad guy to consider. And I would be okay in a deeper sort of dynasty trying to get him. And there is potential for him to be a top 100 guy at some point in the next 4 years. I just don't ever think he really gets better than that. I don't think his upside's all that high for a 23-year-old rookie with knee problems. That's a concern. We're heading into the real, real trash of this team now. Marcelo Huertas was a very, very old rookie coming across from the Brazilian guy who'd been playing in Spain. He's 33 years old. He is a restricted free agent. He had some moments last season. He had some moments that weren't great as well. He was last on the team in box score plus minus at a -6. He was third worst in terms of win shares. He actually took wins away from when he played, but he led the team in assist percentage. He was able to get quite a few assists happening and played a pretty decent role down the stretch when guys were injured, and he was playing a nice role, and you had to consider him for DFS especially. 16.5 minutes in his debut campaign, 4.5 points, 0.3 threes, 3.5 assists, 0.5 steals, 42 and 93. So an excellent free throw shooter, obviously, as well. But at his age, is his role going to go up? He's a backup point guard, obviously, and he could fit a role on some teams as a backup, but how much better does he get? Now, you'd say that someone at age 33 is not going to get better the next season, but Huertas, having a second season in the NBA, could improve marginally. But I'm not putting a huge amount of focus on him. He was like 305th in 8 category leagues. You have to be talking really deep leagues to really consider Huertas in Dynasty as well, or even for redraft next year, because we just need to see where he ends up. Nick Young. Oh, he was brutally bad. 19 minutes in 54 games, 7 points, 1.5 threes. As per usual, 1.8 rebounds, 0.6 assists, 0.4 steals, 0.1 blocks. Horrific, horrific numbers. 34% from the field. The best thing you can say about Nick Young is he shot 83% from the free throw line. He's really bad. He is still signed for a couple more seasons in LA. He's got $5.5 million due next year, and he's got a $5.7 million player option in 17-18, which you would imagine he would pick up because he's not going to be getting a contract worth that much. Now, we knew that Byron Scott hated him, but will Luke Walton like him? Unlikely. He's not going to be around. They could easily just waive this guy and eat the $5 million if it's going to come down to an issue between him and Russell. Young is gone. There is no chance of him sticking around. Fantasy-wise, you can pretty much scrap Nick Young off your fantasy radar. He will not be providing any sort of relevance to any team in the near future. I wouldn't have thought. I can't really be bothered talking too much more about him, to be honest, because he was just putrid. He had a PER of 9.1. He's older than you think. How old actually is he? I've just lost the number. He's 30 years old already. It's only downhill from here from Young, and to go downhill from what we saw from him last season is a slippery slope into complete crapness. Tariq Black is a guy that I like. He finished the season with not a great ranking, 348/349 for 8 and 9 cats. These are not good numbers, obviously. But to me, he shows some potential. And without at the moment, he's the only actual center that's on the roster. So there's something there for him. He played only 39 games, which was way too low. 13 minutes, 3.5 points, 4 rebounds, half a block, half a steal, 54 and 42. So obviously the free throws are a real concern with Tariq Black. But he's got something about him that makes me just, I don't know. I just look at him and I see him play and I go, you know what, there's something to like about Black. He finished 7th on the team in win shares, ahead of Young, ahead of Russell, ahead of Huertas, ahead of Bryant. His defensive box score plus minus was 4th on the team. He's a really good defender. Offensively, he is atrocious. So he's not a starting center, but he could be a backup center for deeper people in deeper leagues. I think that he probably cracks the top 300 next season. He was out of the top 300 in rank this year. I think he cracks it this season. I think that what he does was not recognized very well by Scott at all and wasn't played enough. I think Walton can see what he can bring, and it's only his second season in the NBA. I think that he plays a pretty significant-ish role with no Sacre, no Hibbert around. They look to bring in another center. Black plays 17 to 20 minutes a game. I think he gets a bit of an uptick in what he does, and I do think that he can produce some decent numbers, assuming they bring him back. Of course, he's a restricted free agent, so he might get an offer somewhere else that they don't want to match, which seems unlikely. I'm not sure that people are going to be knocking down Tariq Black's door to sign him to a mega deal. But bringing Tariq Black back is not a horrific idea. I think that he can actually work decently well as a backup big man. And again, in really deep dynasty formats, He's someone who his name is probably not going to be considered very highly, but I do think that he can bring something. The problem is the free throws. You do have to look at that, and you do have to be a little bit worried if your team can't take on a 42% free throw shooter, and if he gets those extra minutes, then the impact of that increases. He only took 1.2 shots in his 12 minutes, but if he takes three or four, if he for some reason got 25 minutes and takes three or four attempts, then you're in trouble. So bear that in mind, but don't get too crazy, but there's a little bit there. I'll tell you where there's nothing to love is Meta World Peace. He reckons he's going to play in the NBA for 3 to 4 more years. He is dreaming. He was atrociously bad. For a big stretch of the season, he was shooting less than 30%. He got it up at the end to finish 31% and 70% from the line. He is toast. There is no point in dealing with him in fantasy. He was taking developmental minutes away from younger players like Anthony Brown, and he just shouldn't have been playing. And it's as simple as that. For a team as bad as they were, to bring in World Peace and Huertas as two 30-plus-year-old guys, and World Peace hadn't been playing in the NBA, was just ridiculous. I don't want to talk about him anymore. Let's move on to Anthony Brown, who suffered a foot fracture at the end of last season. He should be back for training camp and should be back for next season. But it was not an auspicious start for Brown. Now, he did get a few starts when Bryant was out, but didn't really make the most of them. He was a 40% three-point shooter in college, did not translate that into the NBA, where he shot 29%. He averaged 4 points per game in his 21 minutes, 0.7 threes, assists low, half a steal, 0.2 blocks, 31 and 85. Now, the great free throw percentage makes me think that his field goal percentage will jump, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him as a 42 and 36 from the field and from three next season. I think he can make that jump. But he's going to be slotted behind Brandon Ingram on the wing, but that's fine. I think he can still get around that 17 to 20 minute mark. Now, his rankings were not impressive. 368 for 9-cat, 367 for 8-cat. These are obviously not good numbers. 402 in the 8-2 rankings. These are not good numbers. And I've said that plenty of times for this team. But he is a guy who does have the ability to hit threes. I think we just got to see it develop. Now, his PER of 4.9 is obviously dreadful. He was third worst on the team in box score plus minus with a negative 5. He finished second last in win shares behind Kobe Bryant, one of three players on this team with negative win shares, which is not an easy number to achieve. Huertas, Brown, and Bryant were those three guys. Not a lot to really love in his advanced numbers, but I do think that he can be a guy who instead of being around the 400 rank, is more around the 300, 320 sort of spot, and should improve next season with a year under his belt, without Scott, without Bryant, without these sort of handbrakes that were holding back a lot of the development of these young guys. He was a guy I was a little bit interested in last season, to be honest, as a rookie coming and thinking, you know what, he can hit the three, small forward's a big position of need for this team. And his defense is actually pretty good, especially for a rookie. He held up really well defensively. And I think that he can carve himself out a role where that once the three-point shooting starts to kick off, we might see, you know, in 3 years' time, he becomes a top 200 player. But that's probably the limit of what Anthony Brown can bring. And that's not terrible. Ryan Kelly was terrible. He thrived under Mike D'Antoni in his rookie season. The 2 years under Byron Scott didn't really work out that well. He was 374th last year, 381 in 8-cat leagues. Not good numbers. He's an unrestricted free agent. Unlikely he is back. He averaged 13 minutes a game in his 36 games, 4.2 points, 3.5 rebounds, 0.1 threes only. His three-point shooting dropped off tremendously. Hit just 14% of them, and that was the only thing keeping him in the NBA. If he ends up on another team at this point, I will be stunned. I don't think there's really anything that Ryan Kelly is bringing to the table that will get anyone really excited. His defense is not ideal. He was a negative 4.9 offensive box score plus minus, which was worse on the team. His defensive box score plus minus, negative 1.1. For an overall negative 6, worst on the team, a negative VORP, a PER of 10.3, a true shooting of just 44%, nothing good from Warren Kelly, and I don't think we'll see him on an NBA roster next season. Speaking of players not going to be on an NBA roster next season, the last player we're talking about here is Bob Sacre. He finished just inside the top 400 for rankings, 396 in both 8 and 9 category leagues. He played in 25 games at 13 minutes, 3.5 points, 3 rebounds, 0.4 blocks, and an atrocious 41% from the field. He is a big man. He's a 7-footer, and he cannot hit shots close to the rim. He is terrible. there is almost zero chance he finds himself in the NBA next season. So if you're holding on to Bob Sacre in a dynasty league, I've got news for you. It's not going to pan out next year. Not really anything to love with him as an unrestricted free agent. If you couldn't make it on this team, if you couldn't do anything on this team who literally had no players really or no talented centers, with Hibbert struggling and Tariq Black not getting much of a run, then Sacre is not going to happen. He is 26 years old. Unfortunately, Bob, I don't think we'll be seeing you putting on an NBA jersey again next season. I could be wrong, but in this one, I feel pretty confident that that I won't be. We'll see how it pans out. That is all the players that pulled on a jersey for the Lakers last season. I'm going to take a quick break. There's going to be a word from our sponsor. I'm going to have a drink of water, and then we're going to talk about the questions that you guys have tweeted in regarding this team. Show with the questions that you guys have sent in regarding the Los Angeles Lakers. And remember, any question you have for any of these podcasts, you can always tweet it at me or post it on Facebook as well. The next show, or the next team we're going to be covering, is going to be the Brooklyn Nets. So if you have any Brooklyn Nets questions, tweet them at me. You can search out the tweets that I had talking about the Nets preview, which I posted probably a little too far in advance, or else just frame it in a question for the Nets podcast. Here's your question. I think the Nets have got quite a few questions, actually, that are worth exploring. Let's finish off with the Lakers here, though. Big Bad Barry Baker on Twitter, at BarryBaker8664. He says, "Hi, Josh. Do you reckon Larry Nance Jr. can become a starter for LA next season, or does he have to move elsewhere?" I talked about that already. I think that he has a semi-decent chance, but I'd put that chance at probably 10 to 15% of him becoming the starting center on this team. And if he did become the starting center, he would be very intriguing for fantasy. If he was the starting center and played 27 minutes a night, then I would want to own him in all 14 team leagues and probably 12 team leagues. But I've talked about Nance already and where I think that pans out. I just don't think that he'll be the starting center. Danny Triella, "What's Randall's and Clarkson's value in dynasty?" Talked about that already. Clarkson's high. Randall, I think that he is overvalued. So if I'm buying Clarkson, if I can, at a decent price, I'm selling Randall if someone else believes in him. Ben Clark at Scout. How do I say that, Ben? Scouse. "Is Russell automatically a breakout candidate just because he's not being coached by Byron?" And the use of the air quotes on coached, or not, I'm using air quotes, the use of the actual quotation marks on coached really seals it for me then, Ben. Yes, he is absolutely an automatic breakout candidate for me at this point. I talked about him already. Absolutely. I can't wait to see. And I am so far from the biggest Russell fan. I was not. You go back and listen to my Summer League podcast from last season. I was not a fan of him whatsoever. But I do think that we can see some real fantasy goodness coming from him. I don't ever think he's going to be an all-star point guard. I don't think he's going to be that good. But I think that we see top 60 sort of potential from him next season. I'm really looking forward to what sort of numbers that D'Angelo Russell can put up next season. IDFS Daily says, "Who will have the most upside on the Lakers now that Kobe is no longer on the team?" It's clearly, to me, long-term, it's Russell, but I do think that Clarkson will once again be the best player again next season. I think that both of those guys have got a shot at being top 50 players, and if they're both not top 75 players, I would be stunned. If I'm picking one of those two in a dynasty format, though, it is Russell. He is younger than Clarkson, and I do think that over in the next 3 years, he probably does have the higher upside, but I think that Clarkson marginally edges him just for next season. The last question we have is Just Funk at The Winter 82. He says, "Are they still in the running for PG-13 if they don't get a top 3 pick?" Well, we know that they do. They did get a top 3 pick, so that's fine. "Are they still in the running for PG-13? if they were ever in the running for Paul George, then Larry Bird probably needs to be relieved of his duties. He probably already does need to be relieved of his duties, just given the whole Frank Vogel mess, who signed with Orlando today, and I think that is a tremendous move for Orlando, and I think it's a tremendous move for Vogel, and I can't wait to see that. Vogel was one of the more consistent rotation guys throughout his tenure in Indiana, and we all know that Orlando needed some consistent rotations. Don't know what this means for Evan Fournier. He was Scott Skiles' love child. Skiles played him tremendous amount of minutes. I love Fournier as well, but whether he comes back or not remains to be seen. But Oladipo, Payton, Gordon, Vucevic, and maybe Hezonja, maybe Fournier are going to play significant minutes, and this team should anticipate. And we talk about Skiles being a defensive guy. He's not. He's a shit coach in all facets of the game. Vogel is a defensive coach. He brings some defense out of Vucevic. He'll bring some more defense out of Gordon. I think Gordon's numbers can really fly up. Love that. I'm completely sidetracked here. If PG-13 was ever in discussion to be traded for D'Angelo Russell and the number 3 pick or number 4, whatever pick, they're dreaming. There is no way that Indiana should do that. If for some reason the Lakers go, we'll give you Russell and pick 2 and Randall for Paul George, and Indiana says yes, the Lakers should be laughing. Laughing. I cannot see a situation where that works for Indiana. So are they still in the running? If there's idiots involved, then yeah, that they could be. But I'm not impressed. What centers fit? Al Horford's obviously the best center that's out there at the moment. Does he fit with this team? Playing him and Randall together, don't hate it, but don't love it. I think that Joakim Noah would be a really good fit in LA. Now, whether he's interested in going there remains to be seen. Whether Chicago brings him back remains to be seen. I think that Noah would be a great fit there, providing some really good passing, because we saw Clarkson's not a great passer. Russell is. Randall's not. But put Noah in the center, I think that facilitating out of him would work really well. We already know what Walton can do with a guy like Andrew Bogut at center. Defensively, they need some real defensive presence, and that's what Noah can do. He won't have to score, because Randall, Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, I'm penciling him in there, will be scoring. I think that Noah makes a ton of sense. Everyone will be wanting Horford, but I think that Noah makes a great deal of sense for the Lakers, and I think he would fit fairly well. Would actually probably end up giving them 5 or 6 wins just from what he's able to do creatively and defensively as well. And he looked decent. He was bad to start the season, but actually started to look good before he went down with that injury. And I think that he would fit fantastically if for some reason he leaves Chicago, which at this point it doesn't seem likely. But you know what? That move could be happening. We'll just have to wait and see. We're done. That podcast is finished. That is the Lakers done. That is the Sixers done. That is the Suns done. There is 27 teams left. We'll be covering the Nets. We'll be covering the Timberwolves in the next couple of days as well. We'll look out for the tweets and Facebook posts regarding the upcoming podcast, apart from the Nets, just to add your questions in. Let me know if there's anything else specific you want me to cover in these sort of shows. Remember, we're going to be doing lots of stuff. All these season previews, season reviews, and we're going to be doing NBA draft stuff. Going to have a mock draft podcast. We're going to have a draft focus podcast. We're going to be doing some other interesting things, which I did last year, where it was looking at potential breakouts across the league. I'm going to be doing some draft review stuff from looking back at the rookies from last season, and also a couple of new ideas that I've got in my head. Of course, the Dynasty League announcements and all the Listener League announcements will be coming in the coming months as well. So subscribe and never miss a podcast, never miss a show. You can do that on YouTube, and you can do that on iTunes and anywhere else you get podcasts. And if you just listen to the audio version, go subscribe on YouTube as well, because it does help the numbers and help me showcase this show to other people and say, hey, look at this. I've got this many people that listen. Let's get some resources happening here, and let's get everything happening on a better scale, which in the end ends up being better for you. You can do that also by helping and supporting the podcast sponsor, which is lootcrate.com/redrock. Go ahead and check those guys out. And of course, Basketball Monster, which makes all of this happen and makes all of this possible. Basketball Monster, obviously not a huge amount happening there. We are still continuing our DFS projections through the conference finals, so you can check them out there. But it's always a hive of activity once we release our season projections and all the tools. It's awesome stuff. You know it by now. Well, you should. And if you don't, check it out, because there's a lot to love about Basketball Monster. And Hardwood Paroxysm, great stuff happening all throughout the playoffs, free agency. Everything will be happening over there as well. So can't wait to read all the articles that Scott and all the team are churning out over at Hardwood Paroxysm and the network of sites, including Nylon Calculus for all you stat heads. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.